So at the opening of the Heart Sutra that we've just begun talking about, the Heart Sutra is the condensed, the highly condensed version of the Perfection of Wisdom texts. At the very opening of it, the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, which is the Sanskrit name of the being also known as Kuan Yin, so we can use they, them pronouns for this being, since they're gender fluid. Avalokiteshvara is deep in meditation and does a meditation on the five aggregates. The Pali word is kanda, because the Heart Sutra is in Sanskrit, translated from the Chinese, but the Perfection of Wisdom texts are all based in Sanskrit, so we can use the Sanskrit term skanda instead of the Pali kanda. Either one. The translation is aggregates or aspects. Lately, I kind of like types of experience. Avalokiteshvara is meditating on these skanda and finds that they're empty. And finding that they are empty is freed from all suffering. And in the moment of realizing this, or shortly thereafter, they exclaim to the monk Shariputra, which is the Sanskrit version of the monk Sariputta from the early texts. Shariputra is sitting nearby or hanging out, their friends, and Avalokiteshvara. And of course, Avalokiteshvara is a cosmic bodhisattva, so maybe this whole thing is happening inside Shariputra's chitta. Shariputra is meditating, has a vision of Avalokiteshvara meditating in the presence of the Buddha, who is also meditating. And Avalokiteshvara exclaims, "Oh, Shariputra, form is emptiness, emptiness is form, form is not other than emptiness, emptiness is not other than form, feelings, perceptions, formations, and consciousness all are like this." So Avalokiteshvara has had an insight around these types of experience, and the insight is that they are empty. The aggregates are first in the text for a reason. They are also the first of the analytical structures that the Buddha taught in the very first discourse, the turning of the wheel of the Dhamma. When the Buddha goes to find his five friends who had abandoned him for eating solid food and falling off the path, and then he finds his own way to profound liberation, becomes a Buddha, hangs out in the bliss of deliverance for 7 weeks, and then decides to go teach with the help of God, essentially Brahma Sahampati, who overhears him considering not teaching, convinces him to teach, and then the Buddha goes off to find his friends to teach them first. And when he finds them, he says, "Friends, I've discovered the middle way between bodily mortification and sensual indulgence. This middle way is the Eightfold Path. And here's what I have to tell you. There is suffering. There is pain, dukkha. That dukkha or that pain has a cause. And that cause is craving, tanha, deep, deep thirst. There's an end to this pain, this kind of suffering, through uprooting that craving. And there's a way to uproot it, which is the Eightfold Path." So these are the Four Noble Truths. And he defines them, and he says, what is this dukkha, this pain, this suffering? And he starts with the physical realities. He says, old age is painful, birth is painful. Birth is painful, old age is painful, death is painful. Not getting what you want is painful. Getting something you didn't want is painful. Losing things that you love is painful. And then he sums it up by saying, in short, the five aspects of experience, the five khanda or aggregates, I don't love the translation aggregates, but it's the standard, so I'm going to keep saying it. But I'll say these other homonyms, or these other, you know, synonyms at the same time. Aggregates, aspects, types. In short, these five types of experience affected by craving. The translation of this phrase is actually kind of difficult. It's the upadana khanda. Upadana means like clinging, and it's like feeding. It's the constricted form of craving, and it's a compound with khanda, these aggregates. So sometimes it's translated kind of awkwardly as like the five clinging aggregates. The grammar of that is kind of all wrong, but it really is like these five kinds of things, when clung to, and in a certain way, clinging is what makes them what they are. They are the cause of this pain. So this is the first list that the Buddha says, look into these five things, inquire into the khanda, these types of experience. And you'll see that they are all dukkha. And so here, in the first paragraph of the Heart Sutra, Avalokiteshvara says, look into these five things, these five skanda, and you'll find that they're all empty. And so these two openings, the opening of the Heart Sutra as the condensation of the entire perfection of wisdom, and the opening of the turning of the wheel of the Dhamma as a condensation of the Buddha's entire early teaching, these two are really parallels. And they define, in a way, the first and what came to be called the first and second turnings of the wheel of the Dharma, where the first one is really concerned in a very pragmatic way with the direct experience of pain and distress and suffering in this life, and how to relieve it, why we suffer, and how to stop. And then the second turning takes that whole teaching, and it says that, as true as that is, there's a deeper truth. And the deeper truth is that even that formulation and everything that it points to, they are all empty of a fixated nature. They're empty of swabhava, which is a Sanskrit term meaning like self-being or own being or individual separate identity. Right? And so you can see how the equation goes. In the early system, like the first turning, the first body of teachings says, notice the things you cling to, right? Notice how clinging works. I like this person. I want more contact with them. I get heartbroken when they are separated from me. That's clinging in a very basic way. And recognizing that, really being clear about this emotionally, relationally, it does help decrease the suffering, that kind of heartbreak, right? If you really understand that people will die, there's grief when someone you love dies, but it's not the same as if you were immersed in a kind of deluded fixation on being connected with them, such that you resist the truth of their dying, that you can't stand it, that you hate that this is true, right? There can be a deep grief that's not deluded. And in the early teaching here, this would be a sign that there's not actually this kind of dukkha, this deep, like almost like existential suffering around it. You know, it's just not okay that this person is gone from me. But it can be okay because it's the nature of reality, you know. That's it. It's how it is. So this first teaching of the Buddha's says, look at these five things, and see how we have habits and stories and grasping around them. And notice that it's those habits of grasping that make our experience of them painful. Right? So these five are, you know, five nested ways, really, that we understand embodied life. Right? The first is form. The Pali and Sanskrit term is rupa. form is the form as sensed by the physical senses, things that you can see, hear, smell, taste, and touch. And it also means our own bodies, other people's bodies, other beings' bodies, but also the physical world in general. Right? To the extent that I'm attached to my little computer here and I would be a bit distressed if it got stolen, I have backups. It's not terrible, but you know, it would be a bummer. To the extent that there's grasping there, that would be grasping at form, right? I used the example of the crickets in the meditation. I can hear the crickets, so there's sounds, you know? To the extent that there's grasping there, which is to say that I really like living in the country rather than the neighborhood in Oakland where I lived before this, where there weren't crickets in that particular spot. To the extent that I prefer this, there's attachment to them, right? To the end. And so I hear them. I could grasp at that sound, right? I could get a recording of that sound and play it because I like it so much. The second of these types of experience is the liking. It's Vedana is the Pali term. For these, I'll mostly use the Pali terms because I'm closest with them, and you all are closest with them if you've been hanging out with me. So Vedana is feeling tone. It's not really the liking and disliking. It's the bare affective quality of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So I find the crickets pleasant, right? I find the computer a mix of pleasant and unpleasant and neutral, to be honest. Sorry, computer. Sorry, Siri. You're not always pleasant. I don't know what you mean, Dave. You know. So the quality of Vedana, right? It's an aspect of our experience that you can tune into. This is what Avalokiteshvara is doing, is he's tuning into, they are tuning into each of these five types of experience. And I really like doing it kind of in a string, like we did in the meditation. Tune into the form of something, like something you can see or hear or touch, and then tune into the feeling that's connected with that. Pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. There's a third thing happening. These are all things happening pretty much simultaneously. The third is called perception. Sanya is the Pali. Perception is the quality of recognition or naming. So the fact that I know that they're crickets, that's sanya, that's perception, right? When you open your eyes and look around, you probably recognize everything in your room. And if there's something there that you don't recognize, your mind will give it a red flag, right? Sometimes, you know, if you see a shadow standing by a door and you don't know what it is, your mind will go ping because it could be whatever. Maybe it's dangerous. Who knows what it is? It could be just like, you know, what is that thing over there? And you have to kind of get close. Like, I can't even, what is that? And your mind will try to figure it out. That's perception doing its thing. You want to know what you're hearing. The other night I was enjoying listening to the crickets, but I also really love the sound of the frogs in the winter, and I had kind of a brain fart, and I heard the crickets and I thought they were frogs, and I said in a very moving check-in moment with my landmates, I said, I just love listening to these frogs, and then, you know, a little while later my sweetheart goes, you do know those were crickets, right? I was like, my brain said frogs for a minute. So that was sanya, getting it wrong, like telling the wrong story, right? The fourth is really where the narrative comes in. The fourth of the skanda or kanda is sankhara. The Sanskrit is samskara. You'll hear that one, that version a lot as well. These are mental formations, volitional formations, karmic formations are all things, translations you'll see. And in Bhikkhu Sujato's translations that we sometimes use from Sutta Central, he just sometimes translates sankhara as choices because the volitional aspect is so strong here. This is really like, you can notice in a moment, if I keep going with the crickets like we did in the meditation, I can notice that there's not just the sounds and my liking of them and my recognition of them as crickets, but there's all the meaning that surrounds them. The meaning around like my life in the country and this moment of climate change and this season where the crickets are out and this time of night that I love so much and my love for California and this area, all of these things that are like biographical, sociopolitical, all those stories that are knit together, the way that, oh, when I hear the crickets, I think about this particular place I lived in my childhood or wherever, whatever you've got, all of that is sankhara. And all of the things you might do in relation to it or want in relation to it is all sankhara. It's all the mental, emotional stuff that surrounds a sensory experience, right? So, you know, you see an attractive person while you're out and about in town. And so there's the seeing form. There's the pleasure in the seeing, it's vedana. There's the recognition, however you recognize them. You say, oh, that's such and such's friend. Or the recognition of like, oh, like that's, you know, that's a person. That's a recognition. That's a person of my, that person is my type, whatever that means to you. Okay, that's a different kind of recognition. All of the ways that you could name them. Oh, that's a person of a certain gender or a certain race or a certain socioeconomic position. Those are all types of recognition. And then this fourth one, sankhara, is everything that spills out, like spins out after that. You know, I want to talk to them. I want to get close to them. Maybe we could do a thing. Maybe they're, you know, you start looking to see if they have rings on their fingers, you know, like that's sankhara. That's all stories unfolding as choices, right? How stories that we build unfold as words, unfold as actions. Sankhara encompasses that whole mental and emotional cognitive realm where all that stuff happens. A lot of our life happens in the sankhara experience. And the fifth of the khanda is sense consciousness, vijnana. Jnana is the word for knowing or knowledge. The V is a kind of amplifier, and sometimes it means double, but it's really like the knowing that you know. So the knowing of the sound of the crickets is a kind of, that's sort of the perception level, the recognition. But I know that I know. I'm conscious. I'm not in deep dreamless sleep. I'm awake. And there's a kind of self-consciousness here, right? When my cat hears the crickets, I don't know if she thinks, I don't know if she has thoughts like, I'm hearing crickets. You know, I'm aware of the crickets. Whatever cat language is like, she has her own language, but does she have that kind of self-consciousness? Like, what does she think? What's her sankhara like around crickets? And consciousness is a particular thing where there can be awareness of what's happening, right? She's conscious of the crickets. Does she know it? Can she be mindful, for instance, of vijnana? Could she investigate vijnana? So these five aspects then, in this earliest teaching, this first turning, these are what the Buddha says are affected by clinging, or they are the fuel for clinging. So the word khanda that we translate as aggregates or aspects or types, it literally means a bundle of things. And in some Vedic Sanskrit usage, it means a bundle of wood, like firewood. And firewood is what you burn in the sacred fires in the Vedic tradition. And so there are some text deconstructive ideas that when the Buddha chose the term khanda to refer to these five types of things, he may have been making a kind of pun or wordplay reference to the Vedic fire worshipping tradition, where you would bring fuel and you would burn the fuel in these particular ritual ways. That was the sacrifice. And he makes clear in several different examples that clinging can be thought of as very similar to what happens when fuel is burning. And so there's the idea that there's ambient heat. The fire element is ambient in nature. There's temperature. And that when that temperature is excited to a certain point and comes into contact with fuel, there's the ignition of a spark and of a flame. And that flame burns as long as there is fuel, right? As long as the fuel and the heat are in contact, or the fuel and the fire element really are in contact. And if you separate those things, like you blow on it and you push the fire away from the fuel, if you push the fire far enough away from the fuel, it goes out, right? So the kanda burn when they are upadana, feeding, or being fed upon. And so they are the fuel for clinging. Whenever you have a sensory experience, all five of these aspects are present. They're never really present by themselves. You never encounter a form without a feeling. You can't see something without it being pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. You never really have a feeling without some kind of perception, right? The brain just does its thing of wanting to know what it is. All of these things are present. And so the arising of the kanda then is a kind of sparky or you know, hot experience. And we can fold this into how we might think of sensory life as being the place where a particular kind of eros happens, a particular kind of intimate contact happens, where this being, right, this knowing, this physical experience comes into contact with the world in some way, and there's a kind of intimacy with it, right? And if we become aware of all of these five ways that sensory experience shimmers, there's a kind of erotic contact. And I'm using that sort of eros language on purpose to lean into the energy that's there, right? I'm not talking about sexual contact as much as like a kind of extraordinary aliveness in the sensory world. We wouldn't cling if there wasn't eros, you know? If the sound of the crickets wasn't, you know, one of my most beautiful, the most beautiful musics to me in the world, and it has all this meaning, and it just does something to my nervous system, and that I can tune into, that's erotic, right? That's contact through pleasure into depth in a certain way, right? There's a kind of aliveness there, and it's not always pleasurable, right? There's an eros in the painful when there's a kind of intimate contact. And so the upadana kanda, the clinging aggregates, is a way of saying that when this eros is bright and there's really contact with the world, that one of the likely outcomes is a certain kind of suffering, because it's actually quite difficult to enter into the eros of life and not fall prey to the quintessential deluded response, the quintessential non-free response, which is to crave. It's completely possible to recover from this craving and still have an awake eros with life. At the very end of his life, the Buddha was walking with his friend and cousin Ananda, and the Buddha knew that he was within a few months of dying, and they were traveling slowly toward the Buddha's hometown, and the Buddha knew he was never going to see some of these places again, and there were several places along the road where they've been in a certain area, and they're kind of leaving town. They're on the road out of town, walking. These old men, the Buddha's 80 years old. They're walking out of town. He's with his cousin, who's only slightly younger. Two old monks walking out of town. And the Buddha knows he's never going to see this place again. And he repeatedly, seven times mythically, but he repeatedly, at the edge of town, stops and turns back and looks at the town. And he says, Ananda, Benares is so beautiful. The shrines are beautiful. It's so lovely. And the Blessed One will never see this place again. And then he turns back and they walk on their way. And he does this over and over. He stops and looks back at a place. You know, this is like the benevolent, strange parallel, I don't know, to Lot's wife looking back and being turned to salt. The Buddha looks back and he just delights in beauty. He says, this place is so beautiful. And we've had such good experiences here. He's essentially saying, I love this place. And I'm saying goodbye to it. You know, and he does this over and over. He has not lost this delight in the world. He loves his place and his people. And yet his heart is free. There's no clinging. And so the whole thing that the Buddha is saying to his friends when he first teaches them, he says, you know, there is this pain of being separated from something that you love. That pain is caused by the grasping at it, not by the love, but by the grasping, and they're different. And let go of the grasping and the pain goes away. And there's this different kind of poignancy in the eros of aliveness. And so the promise of practice is that our life in intimacy with this earthly existence, and maybe beyond this, right, into other realms, but like sentient life, conscious life, can be lived without the constriction of the heart. And so then that these five things, this form, these feelings, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, the recognition of things, the meaning in things, and the pure knowing of being present with them, that these things can unfold without the heart clenching in response. That's the promise that the whole Dhamma begins with. And then here in this in this second turning vision, Avalokiteshvara, remember whose core being is defined by the quality of compassion for suffering. Right? So we're still in relation to those fundamental pains. Avalokiteshvara, you know, opens their eyes just barely from meditation and says, here, Shariputra. Sometimes it's translated as, oh, Shariputra. The Sanskrit is iha Shariputra, which could just mean in this doctrine, Shariputra. But you can also say, you know, here, in this place, in this moment, right? Or just like, hey, Shariputra, my friend, you know, my student, my peer, my brother. Form is empty. And this amazing thing happens with emptiness that we've been talking about these last couple of months, that emptiness accomplishes the non-grasping. Emptiness is one of the doorways to non-grasping, because you can't grasp at something that isn't really there. Right? The reason that the grasping is so intense, you see the attractive person across the street, the grasping is intense because you think they're really there for you. You know, you make the story of like, oh, we could be a thing, you know. Instead of understanding that like this moment of their face shimmering at you from across, you know, from across Telegraph Avenue is just a moment of you know, luminous suchness exploding, and your whole beings, you know, are shot through with stars for a moment, and then, you know, who knows what happens next. Maybe you get married and have a long life together, you know. Maybe you see a ring on their finger and you're like, oh well, and you just keep walking. Like whatever happens, right? You say hey and they say hey, and then you're like, oh, they're not actually, you're not my person, whatever. Like empty means that nothing is the solid thing that you could grasp at, right? You see like, oh, the story, you know, I invented a whole story about them. It flowered for about 12 seconds and it's gone. So it was a sankhara. Sankhara are empty, you know. And so these two openings to the teaching just mirror each other in this beautiful way, right? The Buddha comes to his friends and says, don't hold on. Don't hold on tightly. And you'll see things very differently. And the Avalokiteshvara says to Shariputra, don't hold on at all. You can't, you know. So the Buddha says, when you remove the element of fire from the fuel, the fire goes out. Where does it go? You know, it doesn't go anywhere, right? It only arises in dependence on the fuel. Separated from the fuel, the fire goes out. Just so, the Buddha says, when separated from the fuel of the khanda, the grasping goes out. You know, the heat of grasping, it doesn't exist without the contact. So you blow it out, you know, and the experience is of a kind of extinguishment. The pain of the burning is gone. And what's left is the world as it is. You know, the crickets singing and all the beautiful people walking by, and it's okay, right? And Avalokiteshvara says this from their being, you know, deep compassion. The compassion is for all beings who don't understand this and who thus suffer again and again and again for so long, unable to live in the intimacy with all things because the mind is lost. So we'll pause there for now. All right, thanks for listening. For those who hear these things later on, by the way, hello, the empty future YouTube world. We stop here and there's Q&A for the folks that are here. So if you want to come and join this thing, come and find us. There's instructions on the website to come and get in on this little group. All right. Blessings to all y'all out there.